So now for the last topic of today, IBOR reform. Yes. Vianna?
Yeah, I'll start with a quick introduction. So in the October meeting, we talked about modifications to the underlying financial instruments that are required by the reform and that are done on an economically equivalent basis. And how we would account for that, including the practical experience that the board have tentatively decided to include in the standard. So that was the October decisions. In the paper for this month, what we will talk about is how those decisions then interact with the changes that needs to be made to the hedging relationship, and whether when you make those changes that are coming out of these modifications that are required by the reform, whether those changes to the hedge documentation would result in the discontinuation of the hedge in the relationship, or whether there's a way in which that can continue. So that's more or less the flavor of this month's discussion. So for that, I'll hand over to Umair to take us through the paper.
Thank you, Rihanna. As Rihanna mentioned, we discussed the impacts of IBOR reform on classification and measurement at the October 2019 board meeting. Following those discussions, the next key area for discussion with the board is the potential hedge accounting issues that could arise as a result of IBOR reform. Agenda Paper 14 provides a summary of the board's tentative decisions to date for Phase 2 and is provided for information only. Today's discussion will focus on Agenda Paper 14A, which covers the hedge accounting implications due to IBOR reform. This agenda paper discusses the following areas: interaction of the hedge accounting and documentation issues with the tentative decisions on classification and measurement, valuation adjustments on the hedged items and hedging instruments arising following the modifications directly required by the reform, and hedges of group of items. To be consistent with the structure in the paper, I will tee up these areas separately and will ask questions on each area before moving to the next. As highlighted in paragraph 6, based on board member comments and feedback at the October meeting, we have refined the description of modifications that qualify for the practical expedient as those that are required as a direct consequence of IBOR reform and are done on an economically equivalent basis. For ease of reference, this paper uses the term modifications directly required by the reform to refer to modifications that meet both criteria and therefore qualify for the practical expedient. In paragraphs 9 to 15 of the paper, we discuss the implications for hedge accounting when modification results in derecognition. In paragraph 14, we note that consistent with the current requirements in IFRS 9 and IAS 39, discontinuation of a hedging relationship in which either the hedging instrument or a hedged item has been substantially modified will provide useful information to users of financial statements, because discontinuation would reflect the economics of a financial instrument that was derecognized. In paragraphs 17 to 21, we discuss modifications that do not result in derecognition and are not directly required by the reform. In paragraph 20, we note that assessing the implications on hedge accounting of such modifications would be beyond the scope of the project and inconsistent with the objectives of Phase 2. Therefore, in paragraphs 16 and 22 of the paper, we recommend that no amendments should be made to IFRS 9 and IAS 39 to determine whether a hedging relationship should be discontinued following a substantial modification that results in derecognition of the hedged item or the hedging instrument, or a modification that does not result in derecognition and is not directly required by the reform. Moving on to modifications that are directly required by the reform, paragraphs 23 to 41 of the paper discuss hedge accounting implications for modifications that are done on an economically equivalent basis and thus qualify for the practical expedient. In paragraph 42, we note that amendments to hedge designations necessary to reflect these modifications to the hedge risk, hedge item, and the hedging instrument would trigger discontinuation of hedge accounting under the current requirements in IFRS 9 and IAS 39. However, in paragraph 46 of the paper, we note that discontinuation of hedge accounting for modifications directly required by the reform would not provide useful information to users of financial statements, because such modifications would not constitute a change in the general risk management strategy and risk management objective for hedging underlying risk. Also, the accounting outcome from discontinuation of hedge accounting would not reflect the economics of underlying instruments that are modified on an economically equivalent basis. In paragraphs 49 to 50, the staff note that permitting changes in hedge documentation necessary to reflect modifications that are required by the reform, would provide more useful information to users of financial statements, and would also significantly reduce the operational burden on preparers, as they would not have to discontinue hedging relationships only due to such changes. In paragraph 54 of the paper, we recommend that IFRS 9 and IAS 39 should be amended to permit specific changes in hedge documentation necessary to reflect modifications to the hedge risk, hedged item, and hedging instrument that are directly required by the reform, that is, those that are done on an economically equivalent basis and thus qualify for the practical expedient. We clarify in paragraph 55 that after making these amendments to the hedge documentation, if the hedging relationship does not meet the hedge accounting qualifying criteria for any other reasons, an entity shall discontinue hedge accounting as required by IFRS 9 and IAS 39. So this brings us to our first set of questions for the board that are after paragraph 55. The first question is whether the board agrees with the staff recommendations in paragraphs 16 and 22 that no amendments should be made to the current requirements in IFRS 9 and IAS 39 to determine whether a hedging relationship should be discontinued following a substantial modification that results in derecognition of the hedged item or the hedging instrument, or a modification that did not result in derecognition and that is not directly required by the reform. The second question is whether the board agrees with the staff recommendations set out in paragraphs 54 and 55 that IFRS 9 and IAS 39 should be amended to provide an exception that the following changes in hedge documentation necessary to reflect modifications directly required by the reform do not result in discontinuation of hedge accounting. A, redefining the hedge risk to make reference to an alternative benchmark rate. B, redefining the description of the hedging instruments and or the hedged items to reflect the alternative benchmark rate. And for IAS 39 only, changes to the method used for assessing hedge effectiveness. As mentioned in paragraph 54, we highlight that changes in hedge documentation referred to in question 2 are only those that are necessary to reflect modifications directly required by the reform, that is, those that are on an economically equivalent basis. With that, I'd like to open the floor for discussion.
Sure.
I agree with the staff's recommendations on question 1 and question 2. I think the just a couple of points on draft, and I agree with your analysis. I think we're going to have to be very careful in the way that we word the relief, because it's sort of easier to explain modifications required by the reform when you're looking at sort of individual instruments, whereas the whole idea of hedging, let alone hedge accounting, is not something you even have to do. So the idea that it's required by the relief is a harder concept. So I agree with what you've got in 54 A, B and C, but I think somehow we need to articulate that basically what we mean is if you had this particular type of, I don't know, cash flow hedge for floating IBOR risk, and we mean as long as all you're doing is moving to a cash flow hedge of a new risk-free rate, you know, that's the sort of thing we're talking about, and no more, no less, and that's what you mean. And so I agree with that, but we're going to have to be careful with the words. Again, being careful with the words, I myself had to go back and reread the paper because I kept writing down all of the time, and it's economically equivalent because I'd forgotten the shorthand you'd used. I agree with your shorthand, but I think when we get to update, we'll need to spell out that we're saying that question 2 applies where you would have qualified for the relief and where your hedges are only being sort of modified in the way that we expect. So I think that's important. Then just one drafting point and one thing for the future. Paragraph 55, I agree completely, but we should say an entity shall reflect those changes. Good, sounds like it's a good idea. Shall is you have to. And it did make me wonder what's going to happen, because essentially what this analysis does is confirms that if you're having to make changes today, you wouldn't be able to continue to it would be a de-designation because of all of the tinkering that's going on. So I think what we'll need to think about probably, and you may already have it on your radar when we get to transition, is whether there's a way to be helpful / creative so that if somebody's having to make changes before, with the best will in the world, we can get this amended and finalised and et cetera. If they've already made changes that are consistent with what we're planning, whether there's a way to enable them to continue their hedge accounting, which is unusual because we don't usually do things retrospectively, but I think we need to think about what, if anything, we can do to help people practically.
Yeah, that is something that we are thinking about for the transition paper.
Mary?
Another person
who's agreeing with the staff recommendations, but I want to maybe confirm some understandings and suggest that we make sure that they are highlighted in communications that we do. And one, I'm kind of sneaking back to paper 14 for a minute, for this, but it then feeds through into what's in 14A, which is if you modify, in connection, and I'm using different words from the definition deliberately, in connection with IBOR reform, if you modify an instrument or instruments in a way that is not economically equivalent. So let's say, given in your jurisdiction, the IBOR rate to risk-free rate, the appropriate change in spread would be plus 450 basis points. In the neighborhood of 450 basis points. If your modification was actually 700 basis points or 200 basis points, you would, rather than saying, nope, it isn't economically equivalent, done, you would pull out the 450 basis point adjustment, apply the relief to that, and then assess the rump, the residual, to see if it's substantial. And then kind of the, what some could see as the gotcha, but I think we have to, it is our conclusion, I think we have to be clear about it, is if when you then evaluate the rump, you conclude that the rump represents a substantial modification that triggers derecognition, then you're derecognizing the whole thing, including the economically equivalent piece that you pulled out in the first step. And I think, that you separate, even if it is not contractually separated, the two levels of adjustment, but then you considered the derecognition applies to the whole, becomes relevant in this paper, because I assume it's also the same for the determination of discontinuance or not for a hedge accounting. If you have concluded that the rump piece is a substantial modification, you then have to discontinue hedge accounting for the whole of the hedge relationship, not just for the piece that relates to the residual that you analyzed separately. So it's the same thing. It flows on. Okay. I think we just may want to make sure that comes through very clearly, because somebody, once you think of separating something, you could fall into the habit of thinking about those separated pieces separately for the rest of your analysis. So that was one thing. So I'm agreeing with the recommendations, but think we have to really emphasize those points in the communications broadly, not just maybe the immediate reporting in terms of update. A second thing is, I think something that, in my view, I'd like to come back to it another day rather than now. The example you give in paragraph 36, and you may have to monitor and correct if I don't use exactly the right language. You give an example of a fixed rate instrument for which an entity has a non-contractually specified risk component, for example, IBOR, and then in connection with the IBOR replacement, in that jurisdiction, their IBOR goes away, for that instrument, that IBOR goes away, so it wouldn't make sense to continue to have that as the non-contractually specified risk component. So I get the point that says the change in documentation to reflect the update, we will give relief with respect to that. But I think there's a question that I'd like the staff to analyze about whether at the date you make the modification for something that otherwise would qualify as a continuation of the hedge relationship, whether the modified one has to, at the date of modification, meet the hedge accounting criteria, or whether that, whether that's covered by the conclusion of continuation. I think just coming back and considering that separately would be helpful. And then the third, and this is maybe a bit of a granular point, but it came to me in connection with the discussion in paragraph 31, and you're talking about the kind of modifications that may be directly required, the timing and frequency with which the benchmark rate is reset. Presumably, once you have to do a modification just, once you have to do a modification because of IBOR, I can see that it will be absolutely necessary to reconsider the reset dates, given that we're moving from rates with duration to something that may be very, very short term. But I think we have to write it in a way that people don't assume any reset that you choose is acceptable, that for some of these things, I assume that when you're evaluating whether it is a necessary change, you have to relate the reset that change that you make back to what is necessary to be economically equivalent rather than free pass to make any change you want, which could, I think, change the economics. So that I think it's just an observation that I hope is not inconsistent with our past discussions, but just wanted to make sure that we thought about that. So that was, I think, it for me in terms of points.
I think just to maybe clarify one other thing, you're right about what we've meant with the modifications in last month's discussion, that, if you pull out the piece that are assumed to be economically equivalent, you look at the rest to see whether that is substantially different and whether that requires a derecognition, and then you derecognize the whole instrument if needed. And I think similar to what we're saying in this month's paper is, if you've got those other modifications that are happening at the same time, when you look at the impact on your hedging relationships, you need to assess whether those other changes leads to the requires the discontinuation of your hedging relationships. And if they don't, then you still can apply the changes to the hedge documentation and all of those that are required by the reform, you can still apply that, but you first need to assess whether the relationship itself needs to be discontinued because of those other changes, and if not, then you can go back and still apply the changes to the hedge documentation to the extent that it's related to the reform or required by the reform.
Yeah, and so it may be helpful to kind of show that there are parallels between the decision about derecognition and the parallels about discontinuance of the hedge relationship, because I was focused on the fact that if you conclude because of those other changes discontinuance is necessary, then you have to discontinue the whole thing, not just the piece. But your point is, and if you don't have to discontinue, too many negatives, if you conclude that the other changes do not require discontinuance without application of any relief, then the relief applies to the piece, the piece that's the economic equivalent.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you want to vote on the questions?
If there's no.
Or both?
I think we can take them one by one. That'd be easier.
Question one.
14.
Question two.
14.
We are in a unanimous mood today.
Moving on to the next section of the paper. Following on from the staff recommendation to permit specific changes in hedge documentation necessary to reflect modifications directly required by the reform, some valuation adjustments might arise on the hedge item and the hedging instrument to reflect the replacement of IBOR with an alternative interest rate in a continuing hedging relationship. In paragraphs 56 to 75, we discuss such valuation adjustments in the context of hedge risk designated in fair value hedges, hedge risk and hedged items designated in cash flow hedges, and derivatives designated as hedging instruments. In paragraph 60, the staff highlight that in phase one, the board noted that no exceptions should be made to the measurement of hedged items or hedging instruments because that would be inconsistent with the decision not to change the requirements to measure and recognize hedge ineffectiveness in the financial statements. As noted in paragraph 62, the staff considered but rejected permitting such valuation adjustments to be recognized in profit or loss over time because they would not meet the definition of an asset or a liability under the conceptual framework. The staff also rejected allowing such valuation adjustments to be recognized in opening retained earnings because multiple adjustments to retained earnings across different reporting periods could be confusing to users of financial statements and it would not provide them useful information. The staff's view, measuring and recognizing any valuation adjustments to the hedged items and hedging instruments upon their modification in profit or loss, as currently required by IFRS standards, would reflect the economics of the amendments and therefore would provide useful information to the users of financial statements. It will also be consistent with the recommendation in question 2 to consider the hedging relationship as a continuing relationship following the changes to the hedge documentation. This brings us to our third question for the board, that is after paragraph 76, whether the board agrees with the staff recommendation in paragraph 76 that no exceptions should be provided from existing IFRS 9 and IAS 39 requirements to measure and recognize valuation adjustments arising when the hedge documentation is updated to reflect an alternative benchmark interest rate as the new hedge risk in a fair value hedge, any hedge ineffectiveness attributable to changing the hypothetical derivative, and valuation adjustments arising when derivatives designated as hedging instruments are amended to replace IBOR with an alternative benchmark interest rate. With that, I'd like to open the floor for discussion.
I agree with your recommendations. I think it's consistent with the sort of basic approach to the whole IBOR stage two, as I understand it, which is sort of to look at finding ways to prevent inappropriate disruption, if you like, but still reflecting the economics, and I think that this is consistent with that. My only comment is in relation to 62B, and it might not matter, it's just sort of thinking ahead to what might end up in the basis. There's discussion about whether or not we should have considered instead having this sort of opening retained earnings adjustment. And I guess I meant to check this with somebody geekier than me, and I haven't had a chance. But I think I'm right.
Just geekier than you.
You are. I think if you look at the conceptual framework, these amounts would meet the definition of income and expenses, and so they should be in profit or loss unless we've said they should go to OCI. I don't think we usually countenance that items of profit or loss would go to opening retained earnings. As far as I remember, the only time when we use opening retained earnings is on transition to a new accounting standard. And here, this wouldn't just be on transition. This could be dripping in over time. So I think it would be a departure, you know, from our sort of normal thinking in a quite a big way that's not fully reflected here. So if there is discussion of this in the basis, I think that would be helpful. But I agree with your recommendations.
I also agree with the recommendation. I think it's consistent with the requirements of the standards, and I think that's what we should be building on here. I could see that some people might argue for the alternatives that you've presented for us, and I'm assuming that they will argue because this is not in normal course of business and that there's artificial volatility that's artificial or not related to performance. But I'm not persuaded by those arguments because I think it becomes very difficult to understand what's going on if we start putting things, well, I don't think it will go to opening retained earnings because I don't think that's consistent with conceptual framework. But if we start putting it into OCI, it becomes very, very difficult to see what's going on. So I think I do agree with what we're proposing, and I do not agree with the other places that we might put this.
Thank you.
Fidel.
Thank you, Hans. Just to clarify in paragraph 63, just because in 62A we mentioned recognition profit or loss over time, I assume that we are saying that the staff think that change in fair value attributable to change to designated hedge IBOR should be designated, recognized in profit or loss at the moment of the change.
Yes, immediately.
Yeah.
And the second clarification is that we say that the valuation adjustment, the ineffectiveness that we calculate due to the change in the interest rate benchmark, we should not take an exception for this one, but for the valuation, we are not discussing here, for example, the fact that if, especially those applying IAS 39, if it is outside the 8125, we are not discussing this here.
We're not, in this paper, we only talk about the actual measurement, which we are proposing not to change how we measure it and where we recognize the differences. We will bring, one of the papers we'll bring at the next meeting is talking about the assessment, which is the 82125, and whether that, you know, should apply or shouldn't apply and when that should be. So we'll talk about the assessment in a later paper. This one is just consistent with the phase one relief where we said, well, you book all ineffectiveness in P&L. And you know, these valuation adjustments really is not different to any ineffectiveness. It's a change in the valuation of the hedged item or the hedging instrument which drives ineffectiveness. And, you know, so we're saying just take it through P&L where it belongs, and then we'll come back to the assessment bit in the next paper.
Because we discussed the discontinuation of the hedge account due to the documentation, change the documentation, but the discontinuation of the hedge due to ineffectiveness, it will be discussed in the future.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. And we support the staff's recommendation.
13, one absent.
Thank you. With that, we will move to the final section of the paper. In paragraphs 77 to 103 of the paper, we discuss the hedge accounting implications of modifications directly required by the reform for hedges of group of items. More specifically, in paragraph 82, the staff highlight the rationale for what is commonly referred to as the proportionality test. In paragraph 85, the staff highlight that failure to meet the proportionality test would require an entity to discontinue hedge accounting prospectively for that group of items. For the same reasons as discussed in paragraphs 42 to 46 of the paper, the staff consider that discontinuation of hedge accounting would not provide useful information to users of financial statements when modifications are directly required by the reform. That is, they are on an economically equivalent basis and so qualify for the practical expedient. Therefore, as noted in paragraphs 88 to 94, the staff is of the view that an entity should be permitted to amend the hedge documentation to define the hedged items as two subgroups within an existing group of items and perform the proportionality test separately for each subgroup of items designated in the hedging relationship. As noted in paragraph 95, the staff considered but rejected requiring entities to split items within a group into two different hedging relationships, as this could result in arbitrary allocation of hedging instruments that are likely to be amended earlier than the hedged items. This will also lead to continuous adjustments in separated hedging relationships as items are modified and moved from one hedging relationship to another. As highlighted in paragraph 96, the staff also considered but rejected providing an exception from the proportionality test, citing concerns about the potential unintended consequences resulting from the absence of such a test, as noted in paragraph 82. As highlighted in paragraph 85, it may be questionable as to whether items within the designated group share similar risk characteristics, as required by IS 39, when only some items in the group are amended for modifications directly required by the reform. In paragraph 97, the staff note that retaining the proportionality test for a group of items would substantiate whether items in a group of items continue to share similar risk characteristics. Therefore, as noted in paragraph 98, the staff is of the view that IAS 39 should be amended so that when items within a designated group are amended for modifications that are directly required by the reform, or if they are modified on an economically equivalent basis, entities could treat IBOR and its alternative benchmark rate as if they would share similar risk characteristics. As noted in paragraph 102, for IAS 39 portfolio hedges, the only requirement is that the financial instruments included in a portfolio need to share the risk being hedged. For the same reasons as discussed in paragraphs 97 to 98, the staff is of the view that IAS 39 should be amended so that when entities change the hedged risk to an alternative benchmark rate in the hedge documentation as discussed in paragraph 54A, it is assumed that all items included in the portfolio of financial assets or financial liabilities share the risk being hedged. So this brings us to our final set of questions for the board that are after paragraph 103. Question 4 is whether the board agrees with the staff recommendations set out in paragraphs 99 and 100 that IFRS 9 and IS 39 should be amended so that when items within a designated group of items are amended for modifications that are directly required by the reform, that is, modifications that are on an economically equivalent basis and thus qualify for the practical expedient, entities are required to amend the hedged documentation to define the hedged items by way of two subgroups within the designated group of items, perform the proportionality test separately for each subgroup of items designated in the hedging relationship, treat the hedged designation as a single hedging relationship and amend the hypothetical derivative accordingly, and for group of items designated under IAS 39 only, entities could treat IBOR and its alternative benchmark rate as if they would share similar risk characteristics. Question 5 is whether the board agrees with the staff recommendation in paragraph 103 that when entities change the hedge risk to an alternative benchmark rate in the hedge documentation due to modifications directly required by the reform, that is those that are on an economically equivalent basis and thus qualify for the practical expedient, it is assumed that all items included in the portfolio of financial assets or financial liabilities share the risk being hedged. This applies to IAS 39 portfolio hedges of interest rate risk only. With that, I'd like to open the floor for discussion.
Mary?
Got a broadly supportive of the staff recommendations, but a couple of things that I want to confirm my understanding of. And I'm glad Daryl's coming next, because one comes from a question I've heard him ask. So let's say in the group you have your I'll say it's the hedged item, just to keep it simple, moving to risk-free rates, but because of the environment in which it operates or which the entity has entered into the hedged items, they may be moving to different risk-free rates. You know, there's, I think, going to be more than one in the EU, for example. And I guess a question is, would you be permitted or required to put the, you know, the ones that are going to risk-free rate A into, you know, subgroup transitioned A, and the ones that are going to risk-free rate B into transitioned subgroup B? So you could end up, for example, with three subgroups, those that haven't moved, and those that have moved to rate A, and those that have moved to rate B. I don't see why we would preclude doing that. But if you did, it becomes, I think, even more important that we emphasize the point that you made in, what is the paragraph? It's either 92, that any one subgroup failing hedge accounting requirements precludes the whole group, not just that subgroup, from applying hedge accounting requirements. So I have one other question, but maybe can I check that one first, or have you not thought about it enough and want to come back? Or
I think we need to think about it a bit more. Mm-hmm. I think my only hesitation is that, I mean, you should only hedge one risk. Mm-hmm. And you know, whether it is the SONIA risk in the UK in your mortgages, and there could be two benchmark rates. I mean, you still, as you said, you still need to meet all of the hedge accounting requirements to have mm-hmm. such a mixed group. So I don't think mechanically we would say more than two groups are excluded. But I think, to your point about if one fails the requirements, then the whole relationship fails the requirements.
So you might be, the likelihood that you could keep them all in one group and then keep them meeting the hedge accounting requirements would go way up. So you might, in effect, end up having to discontinue anyway.
Yeah.
So just, okay, maybe think about that. Okay, the other question goes, again, to this issue of the rate of the pace of change of items in a group. And let's say that because of the hedged items you have and the hedging instruments you have, you get to the end of the year and 75% of your hedged items have transitioned from IBOR to risk-free rate, but only, well, actually make it 75% of your hedging instruments have transitioned, but maybe only 40% of your hedged items have transitioned. I think it's maybe only an issue under IAS 39, because I assume that difference would create actual ineffectiveness in the period. And if it does, is any of the relief that we are thinking about extending to that ineffectiveness because the two legs of the hedge aren't going at the same time? Is that Tadeo's question about
to the assessment
yes.
of the ineffectiveness and whether that goes outside the 80 to 125, which mm-hmm. we'll come back to at a later point.
Okay.
Any other comments or questions? Shall we vote on question four?
Can I just ask a question there? So to Mary's point, the recommendation is explicit that you can only have two subgroups. So when we're voting now, given your answer, are we voting that that's something you will think about a little bit more?
I think we'll let's vote on it as it is at the moment. So, you know, assuming that one rate moves to one other rate, there's not a choice. And then if there's something, we'll think about it, and if there's something, we'll bring it back as a sweep issue on this at a later stage.
Question 4.
And then update will spell out more the scope, yeah?
Yeah.
14.
Question 5.
14.
That brings us to the end of our deliberations, but not before mentioning that this is Fernando's last board meeting. He'll be leaving us shortly. He has been working for us very hard on both IBOR and on dynamic risk management, two very complicated issues. And he was always very well able to give clear explanations of these complex subject matters. So we thank him for his contribution in the last couple of years, and we wish him very a lot of luck in applying the rules that he helped develop. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Okay.